I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
Joining us right now over the phone, we have a very special guest. We're going to talk about a book that I think you're going to find fascinating. I know as soon as this popped up, I thought, okay, we've got to get Chris on. Chris Saliza, who's the author of the new book, Power Players, Sports, Politics, and the American Presidency. The book is released. It is available right now, and Chris is going to join us to talk a bit about it, everything that went into it, and some of the stories. Chris, first off, a pleasure. I appreciate you taking out the time today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. When I saw this pop up, I thought, wow, what a fascinating tale. So to kind of give people a little bit of a background on it, essentially, you are taking American presidents and showcasing either A, their love for sports, or B, their relation to sports. And so if you're into politics, if you're into sports, this is right up your alley.
That's right. So I've had sort of twin passions throughout my life, sports and politics. I've mostly spent my life at CNN and the Washington Post working in politics. But I wanted to write a book to see if I could fuse the two of them, which is a little bit harder than you might think, because I didn't want to write a book that was about a book that Trump supporters would only like or that Biden supporters would only like. I wanted to write a book that, you know, people who are historians, people who are into politics, people who are into the presidency would enjoy. And so but the basic concept of the book is looking at the sports that presidents played, sports they spectated, sports they loved, and what it can tell us about who they are and how they governed. And that's the sort of overarching theme that I tried to stick to in the book.
There's definitely no question, right? Sports, it brings out the most competitive people. Of course, you can play for fun, but I mean, competitive people love sports. In order to become president of the United States, you have to be quite the fierce competitor. This doesn't just happen overnight. And so I see the parallels. I see the ties here.
Yeah, I think when people ask me what's the most common sort of thread or trait between an elite athlete and an elite politician, it's competitiveness, and it's competitiveness bordering on sort of a mania. I always think of Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, where like he can't not be competitive about things, whether it's flipping bottles or anything he's doing, he's competitive about it. And I think that that's true for these politicians too. They see the world as, you know, a chance to win or a chance to lose and a chance to do so in public, right? These are public forums. Just like playing a basketball game in front of people, they're running for office in front of people. And I think they are, by nature, extremely competitive. I'll tell you one quick story that I think illustrates it. So George Herbert Walker Bush was one of our sportiest presidents. He played tennis. He played baseball. He jumped out of parachutes. He played horseshoes. And as he got older, his daughter told me this. As he got older, he would hold a competition with his grandkids to see who could fall asleep first. So it just speaks to the fact that these guys were competitive no matter what they were doing.
Before we start talking about the individual presidents and the sports that you tie them with in this book, when I say this, I think sometimes people think it's an insult, and by no stretch of the imagination is this an insult, but when you talk about an athlete like a Michael Jordan, a Kobe Bryant, a Michael Phelps, we talk about someone who has served this great country as president of the United States, they're almost borderline sociopaths, right? You almost have to be to get to that level.
Absolutely. I think you have to have a mindset and a dedication and a competitive fire that is not the sort that the average person has. I just don't think you reach that level unless you do. And time again in the book, I came across these facts that these guys are just extreme competitors. They are, you know, they want to win. They are willing to do what it takes to win. And I do think it is a different trait than the average person has, no question. And that's whether you're an elite athlete or an elite politician. And I always say an elite politician, by that all I mean is, look, these guys have been elected president of the United States. That's pretty elite in my mind.
Absolutely. Again, our guest right now, Chris Saliza. He's covered Washington politics for four decades at CNN, The Washington Post, and several other. He's also the author of the new book, Power Players, Sports, Politics, and the American Presidency. Chris, with that being said, let's dive into it and talk about some of the presidents. And we'll start with Dwight Eisenhower. I thought this was incredibly interesting, the fact that this guy almost died on a golf course while in office.
Yes. Okay, so I always roll my eyes when critics of Trump or Obama say, oh, they play too much golf, because Dwight Eisenhower played 10 times more golf than either of them. And one of the things he would do every year would be to take a 2.5 to 3 month trip to Colorado from August to October, where he would play golf. He would work too, but he would play 36 holes of golf often a day. So on one of these trips, I believe it was 1953, he's out playing around, and his Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, keeps trying to get in touch with him. Now, this is pre-cell phone, so John Foster Dulles is calling on a landline. Someone comes over and tells him, hey, he's trying to get in touch with you. And Eisenhower is annoyed because he doesn't want to be bothered on the golf course. And there's a physician traveling with him, and he said, you can see the veins bulging out of Eisenhower's neck because he's so annoyed. So he gets to the turn after the ninth hole, and he decides to treat himself. He has a hamburger with onions. He starts playing the next nine, and Foster Dulles keeps bugging him. Eventually they talk, and Eisenhower is so annoyed because he thinks whatever Foster Dulles has told him could have waited. But he has also started to not feel great, and he thinks it's indigestion. He thinks it's his annoyance with Foster Dulles. So rather than he was supposed to play another 18 holes, rather than play that next 18 holes, he says, I'm just going to play nine, so 27 for the day. By the eighth of those nine holes, he's feeling well enough, poorly enough, to stop playing. He goes back. The press tells the collected reporters there he's got a bit of indigestion, but he's fine. Well, they find out at 2 o'clock in the morning that actually they do some testing that he's had a heart attack on the golf course. And so one thing that's fascinating to think about is this is the 50s. This is pre-25th Amendment, pre-presidential succession. So yes, Dick Nixon is the vice president, but it's not clear that if Eisenhower had been incapacitated. Thankfully, he wasn't. He recovered. He spent several months on his farm in Pennsylvania recovering. But if he had been incapacitated, it's not at all clear to me how they would have gone about figuring out who should serve as the president, even in that brief period in between.
I think you gave an excellent segue into Richard Nixon next. Anytime I see anything on Richard Nixon, I immediately turn. It's the first place that I typically read, just based off of the character, I guess. I don't know. I'm a huge Elvis Presley fan, right? So there's that connection to Richard Nixon right out of the gate. We talk bowling, and I'm also a huge bowling fan. I would have never have pegged Richard Nixon for being a bowler, but in this book, starting at around page 78, I believe, you start talking about Richard Nixon and his ties to bowling. He loved to bowl by himself.
Yes. So what an image for a president. So first of all, Nixon has a bowling alley put in the White House, two lanes. He tells the press that regularly, weekly, maybe more often than weekly, at around 10 p.m. when he's feeling down, he goes and rolls 7 to 12 games a night on the bowling alley by himself. And I just thought, what a powerful image. You know, Nixon, very much a loner as president, a guy who struggled with small talk, who struggled with sort of making social connections, just a guy out there rolling frame after frame by himself. Now, he wound up getting pretty good, to be honest. He rolled a 230 at one point in his life, a game that included seven strikes. So he got to be pretty good, but I find that image, that image of Nixon bowling alone, literally bowling alone, really powerful.
And then on the flip side of that, when you talk about John F. Kennedy, okay, so here's Ronald Reagan bowling by himself, or excuse me, Richard Nixon bowling by himself, but then we have John F. Kennedy, and we're talking about touch football games with family.
Yeah, you know what's fascinating about Kennedy? So much of what Kennedy did, and sports included in this, was about perception. And, for example, Kennedy was a really good natural golfer, but you never really saw him play golf. You never heard him talk about golf because he was very worried that people thought he was an out-of-touch rich guy, and that the sport was still associated with out-of-touch rich guys, and he didn't want that. But what did you see him doing? Playing touch football at Hyannisport, and that was purposeful as well. The family wanted to show this kind of hale, healthy, hearty John Kennedy playing a game with his family, his competitive family. The truth of the matter era was very different. Obviously, we know now, but we didn't know then. You know, Kennedy had had health problems throughout his life. He had Addison's disease. And one interesting thing I came up upon in the book, which I didn't know, is he had a bad back for much of his life. One theory of why his back was so bad, or at least part of why it was so bad, is that playing freshman football at Harvard, the game was over, and a family friend tackled him from behind. He didn't see it, tackled him from behind, and hurt his back. And there's at least some thought that that may have impacted his overall back health throughout his life, which I found totally fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, Chris Ciliza, our guest right now, as we talk about his new book, Power Players, Sports Politics, and the American Presidency. Ronald Reagan, everybody knows the history of Ronald Reagan. I mean, here we are talking about a Hollywood star, right? Someone that just kind of, they spit glitz and glamour. And today, I think when you talk politics, people who are, I'm a little too young to remember the Reagan era, but we know him for what he did before he became president of the United States. That obviously plays a factor here as well.
It does. Look, Reagan understood how to play a role, right? And I think he was playing a role as a sports fan in the White House. He was not a particularly sporty guy. He was not all that athletic, although he did play football in college briefly. And he was not into sports in any meaningful way. He was not a guy who's going to fight. He was not Nixon. Nixon would listen to a game on the radio, follow a game, be really into it. That was not Reagan. One thing that Reagan did that I think thought was fascinating, though, is Reagan formalized victorious teams, whether it's the Super Bowl champ, NBA champ, NCAA champ, coming to the White House and celebrating. Before Reagan, it happened occasionally, but it was not a regular process. But what Reagan understood, even though, again, he didn't really care that much about sports, what he understood was it's a good thing for an American president to be photographed with a bunch of winners. So he loved sort of shooting a ball into a hoop with the Lakers and getting a jersey that said Reagan number one on the back. So he was, for our modern moment where we assume that that process of victors going to the White House every time that they win, that's, you got Ronald Reagan to thank for that.
When we talk about some of the more recent presidents, if it's Bill Clinton, George Bush, Barack Obama, even Donald Trump, I mean, for me, someone that's 35, 36 years old, Chris, I think back to George Bush was, for me, kind of the first guy, George W. Bush being the first president that I could tag to sports based off of what he had done before he got into office. And I know that this goes way, way back, but for someone my age, it's probably pretty common. That would be the first president that you would tag with sports.
I think so, and look, I actually think George W. Bush's life could have been very different. Remember, in the late 80s and early 90s, he's the owner of the Rangers. Now, he's sort of the face of the Rangers. He did not put up most of the money to own the Rangers, but he's the public face of the Rangers. He put up a little bit of money. He was a known commodity in the state because of his dad. So, in early 90s, Bud Selig, who is at that point the owner of the Milwaukee Brewers, organizes a coup against Fay Vincent, who's the MLB commissioner. So Vincent is out, and there's a hole there for Major League Baseball commissioner. Bush has serious conversations with both Vincent, who's a family friend, and Selig about the possibility of serving as commissioner, and says that he wants to do it. Now, ultimately, it doesn't work out. Selig becomes the interim and then obviously goes on to serve for a very long time. And Bush winds up running against Ann Richards in 1994 for governor of Texas, and then, you know, we know what happens after that, two terms as president. But there was a moment in which George W. Bush could have been the commissioner of baseball, which would have been a very different history of this country.
Insane to think about. Insane. And then, of course, Donald Trump. I mean, we'll tie him to professional wrestling. Now that the Trump era, for the time being, it's behind us, this kind of fits too, doesn't it?
It does. I always tell people, if you want to understand Donald Trump, watch Monday Night Raw or Thursday Night SmackDown, the WWE offerings on cable TV. I think there's so much about wrestling that Trump internalized. Remember, he and Vince McMahon, the longtime head of the WWE, are friends and have been friends for a very long time. And I think Trump looks to him as sort of an advocate and someone who he views as an equal. And Donald Trump doesn't view very many people as an equal. And I think what he took from wrestling was this idea that there are good guys and there are bad guys. There's good and evil. There's the guys you root for and the guys you don't root for. And it's as important to identify the bad guys who you have to boo as it is the good guys that you have to cheer. And I really think that if you look at how Donald Trump ran his campaigns, and by the way, how he's running this campaign, that's how he approaches this stuff. I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from pro wrestling with Donald Trump.
Chris, this is probably a very difficult question, but who was the most interesting study for you?
It's not, actually. actually, because somebody jumps out in that regard, and it's George Herbert Walker Bush. So I think he's sort of the beating heart of the book. I did 13 presidents. With the exception of Lyndon Johnson, they were all sporty in some way, shape, or form, whether it was as kids or as adults, what they watched and what they were interested in. But for me, Elder Bush, it really typifies what the combination of sports and politics can produce in a person. So he is someone who at a very young age is involved in sports. His mother is a really good tennis player. They play tennis together. The mom really emphasizes not just competition, which was important, but also emphasizes sportsmanship. And Bush internalizes that. You know, he would come home as a kid. He'd run home telling his mom, "I got 2 hits and 3 RBIs. And the mom would always interrupt and say, "But how did the team do, George?" And I think that's sort of, he carries that through his life, almost to his detriment, by the way, in the White House, because I think the sort of we versus me approach that George H.W. Bush, uses in the White House is actually doesn't work. He didn't do a good enough job about touting his own accomplishments, tooting his own horn. I think it's why you see analysis of presidents' effectiveness. Bush has actually gone up in a lot of people's minds since he left the White House, because I think people said, "Oh, look at all these things that he did." But I think sports played an integral role in who this guy was, how he interacted as a teammate, how he saw teams working, who he saw getting credit and who should get credit. I think that all has to do with sports and the way he was raised by his mom.
Absolutely fascinating. Again, Chris Eliza, our guest right now, we're talking Power Players, Sports, Politics, and the American Presidency, a new book that just come out. Chris, I really do appreciate you taking out the last 15, 16 minutes to talk to us about the book. Before I let you go ahead and give us all the information we need, anything important that we didn't talk about, and of course, where we can find the book.
So the book is available literally anywhere you can buy books. I did the audio book. I read it, so that may be buyer beware. If you don't like my voice, don't buy the audio book. But it's basically where it's everywhere. It's on Kindle. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it anywhere. You can get it at independentbookshop.org. You can get it anywhere where books are sold. The thing I would emphasize to people is it's a pretty light read. I did not want to write an 850-page heavy history. I wanted to write a light, fun history that had a lot of anecdotes, fun anecdotes in it, but also got to a broader point, which is that sports are a telling way to understand these people who have governed our country for the last 80 years. And so anyone who's interested in sports or politics, I always say, your dad, your mom, a kid who's graduating college or high school, I think it's a great gift for them, and I appreciate the chance to talk about it.
Oh, it's definitely been a pleasure, Chris. Thank you so much for the time, and best of luck with the book. I think it's absolutely phenomenal, so interesting, and I appreciate you sharing some thoughts today.
Absolutely. Thank you.